Osho, My Way, the Way of the White Clouds. Discourse number 4, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
You have been telling us how easy it is to drop our egos and become one with the white clouds. You have also told us that we have had millions of lives, and many of them with Buddhas, Krishnas, and Christ. Yet still we have not given up our egos. Aren't you creating false hopes in us?
All hopes are false. To hope is to be in the false. So it is not a question of creating false hopes. Whatsoever you can hope will be false. Hope comes out of your falsity of being. If you are real, there is no need for any hope. Then you never think about the future, about what is going to happen. You are so real, so authentic, future disappears. When you are unreal, then the future becomes very significant. Then you live in the future. Then your reality is not here and now. Your reality is somewhere in the dreams. And you make those dreams look real. Because through those dreams, you gain your reality. As you are unreal. That's why so much hoping goes on. All hopes are false. You are real. And my whole effort is how to throw you to yourself. And the ego is all false hopes combined together. Ego is not a reality. It is the collectivity of all your dreams, of all that is unreal, of all that is false. The ego cannot exist in the present. Look at this phenomena. The ego always exists either in the past or in the future. Never here and now. Never, never. That is impossible. Whenever you think of the past, the ego comes, the I comes. Whenever you think of the future, the I comes. But when you are here, not thinking of past and future, where is your I? Sitting under a tree. Not thinking of past and future. Just being there, where you are. Where is the I? You cannot feel it. It is not there. The ego has never existed in the present. And past is no more. Future has yet to be. Both are not. Past has disappeared. The future has not yet appeared. Both are not. Only the present is. And in the present there is never found anything like the ego. So when I say drop the ego, what do I mean? I'm not giving you a new hope. I'm taking all your hopes away. And that is the difficulty. Because you live through the hope. So you feel if all hopes are taken away, you will be dead. Then the question will arise, why live? For what? Why move from one moment to another? For what? The goal has disappeared with the disappearance of the hope. So why go on and on if there is nowhere to reach? Because you cannot live without hope, that's why it is so difficult to drop the ego. Hope has become synonymous to life. So whenever a man is hoping, he appears to be more vital, appears to be more alive, appears to be very strong. When he is not hoping, appears to be weak, depressed, thrown back to himself, not knowing what to do, where to go. And whenever there is no hope, you feel meaninglessness coming to you. Immediately you create another, a substitute is created. One hope is frustrated, immediately another is substituted, because you cannot live in the gap. You cannot live hopelessly. And I tell you that that is the only way to live. Without any hope, life is real. For the first time, life is authentic. So the second thing to be understood, when I say it is easy to drop the ego, I don't mean that it will be easy for you to drop it. I mean it is easy to drop it because the very phenomena of ego is so unreal. If the ego is false, how it can be difficult to drop it? If the dream is just a dream, how it can be difficult to come out of it? If it was real, then there would have been difficulty. If a dream is just a dream, where is the problem to come out of it? You can come out. The dream cannot catch hold of you. The dream cannot prevent you. The dream cannot become a barrier. The dream has got no force. That's why we call it a dream. It is easy to come out of the dream. That's what I mean when I say it is easy to drop the ego. But I don't mean that it will be easy for you. Because the dream is still a reality to you. It is not a dream. The ego is not false to you. That is the only reality. Everything else is false. We are living around the ego. We are seeking more and more egotistical journeys. Somebody throw wealth, somebody throw status, power, prestige, somebody throw politics, somebody throw religion, priesthood. Millions are the ways, but the end, the result, the goal is the same. Seeking more and more the I, seeking more and more the ego. To you, it is a reality. And I say it is the only reality to you. The false has become the real. The shadow has become the substance. That's why it is difficult. Not difficult because ego is very powerful. No, it is difficult because you still believe in it, in its power. If you believe in it, it is going to be difficult. Because on the one hand you want to drop it, and on the other hand you go on clinging to it. It is going to be difficult. When I say to you it is a dream, you want to believe it. Because you have suffered so much through it. Not that you feel the truth of what I am saying. If you feel the truth of what I am saying, you will drop it immediately. You will not ask how. There is no how to it. You see the point and you drop it. You don't see the truth of what I am saying. When I say, it is not realized that the ego is false and can be dropped. When I say that the ego can be dropped, you create a hope out of it. Because you have been so much suffering through it, you create a hope that if the ego can be dropped, then all suffering will be dropped. You become happy with this hope. I am not creating the hope, you are creating the hope. I am simply stating a fact that this is the construction of the ego. This is how an ego is structured. This is how an ego is created, and this is how it can be dropped. And because it is false, no effort is needed. Just seeing the point and it disappears. A man is running, scared, afraid to death, and running because of his own shadow. And you stop him and tell him that you are foolish. This is your own shadow. Nobody is following you. And nobody is going to murder you. There is nobody except you. You have become scared with your own shadow. But once you start running, the shadow also runs faster. The faster you run, the faster the shadow follows. Then the logical mind can say that you are in danger. And the logical mind will say that if you want to escape, run faster, more faster. But whatsoever you do, the shadow will be following you. And if you cannot get rid of it, you will get more and more scared. You are creating the whole thing out of yourself. But if I say to you, this is just a shadow, nobody is following you, and you realize the point, you look at the shadow and you feel the point, will you ask me how to drop this shadow? Will you ask about some technique, method, some yoga, how to drop it? You will simply laugh. You have dropped it. In the moment you see that this is just a shadow and nobody is following you, it has been dropped already. There is no question of how. You will have a good laugh. The whole thing was nonsense. The same happens with the ego. If you can see the truth of what I am saying, the thing has happened. In the very seeing of it, the thing has happened, there is no more how to it. If you still ask how, the thing has not happened and you have not seen the point. But you have created a hope out of it. Because you have been suffering through this ego, you have always wanted to drop it. But this has always been half of your mind. All your suffering has come through the ego, but also all your pleasures. They have also come through the ego. A crowd applauds you, appreciates you. You feel good. That is the only bliss you have known. Your ego rises high, reaches to a peak, becomes an Everest. You enjoy it. And then the crowd condemns you. Then you feel hurt. The crowd becomes indifferent. You are crushed with it. You fall into a valley. A depression. You have been gaining pleasure through the ego. You have been suffering through it. Because of suffering you want to drop it, but because of pleasures you cannot drop it. So when I say that the ego can be dropped easily, hope is created in you, not that I am creating it. Your grief takes it. It doesn't become a realization. It becomes a new grief, a new search for gratification. And you feel that now there is a way and there is a man who can help you to drop the ego and all the misery that ego creates. But are you ready to drop all the pleasures that the ego creates too? If you are ready, it is such an easy thing, just like dropping a shadow. But you cannot drop it half, and you cannot carry it half. Either the whole will go, or the whole will cling to you. This is the problem, and this is the difficulty. All your pleasures and all your sufferings are related to only one phenomenon. You want to preserve the pleasures, and you want to drop the sufferings. You are asking the impossible. Then it is difficult, not only difficult, it is impossible. It is not going to happen to you. Whatsoever you do will be futile. No result will come out of it. You create hope out of it, a heaven, the intense blissfulness of a Buddha. Listening to me, or listening to a Jesus or a Buddha, hope is created, but I am not creating it. You are creating it. You are projecting hope on it. And this is the problem, the complexity, that every hope is a food for the ego again. Even this hope of reaching a paradise, a heaven, becoming enlightened, is a hope. And every hope is food for the ego. Who is trying to become enlightened? The one who is trying to become enlightened is the problem. Nobody ever becomes enlightened. Enlightenment happens, but nobody ever becomes enlightened. When the room is empty, enlightenment happens. When there is nobody to reach enlightenment, enlightenment is there. Because of our language, because of the duality of the language, whatsoever is said about such deeper things becomes false. We say, Gautam Buddha became enlightened. This is false. Gautam Buddha never became enlightened. Gautam Buddha was the unenlightenment. When he was not there, when he became absent, enlightenment happened. When suddenly one day he realized that he is following an absent pattern. When he realized that I am the problem, so whatsoever I do will create more problems. It is not a question of doing right, wrong, this or that. Whatsoever you do will strengthen the ego. Once Buddha realized this, but this realization took many years of effort. When he realized that whatsoever I do will help my ego more and more, he simply dropped doing. In that moment of realization, he simply became a non-doer, absolutely inactive. Remember, this is the problem. You can even create activity out of your inactivity, or you can create activity just to help inactivity come to you, but then you miss. You can stand still, you can sit silently, but if you are making effort to stand still, your standing is false. You are not standing, you are moving. If you are sitting silently and there is effort, you are trying to be silent, that silence is false. You are not silent. When Buddha realized that he is the problem and every activity is out of him, gives more substance to the ego, he simply dropped. Then he was not making any effort to create a non-active state. He was not doing at all. Whatsoever was happening. The wind was blowing and the tree must have been dancing. And then came the full moon and the whole existence celebrating and the breathing coming in, going out, and the blood circulating in the veins and the heart beating and the pulse and everything was happening. But he was not doing anything. In this non-doing, Gautam Siddhartha disappeared. By the morning, there was no one to receive enlightenment, but enlightenment was there. Under that Bodhi tree was sitting a vacant vehicle, breathing, of course, heart beating, of course, better than ever, everything functioning perfectly. But not a doer there, blood circulating, the whole existence around alive, dancing, every atom in Buddha's body dancing, alive. It has been never so alive. But now energy moving on its own accord, nobody pushing it, nobody manipulating it. Buddha became a white cloud. Enlightenment happened. It can happen to you also, but don't create any hope out of it. Rather, seeing the point, drop all hopes, become hopeless, perfectly hopeless. It is difficult to become perfectly hopeless. You many times reach hopelessness, but that is never perfect. One hope drops, you feel hopelessness. But immediately, to cover it up, you create another hope and hopelessness is gone. People go on moving from one master to another. That is movement from one hope to another. They go to one master with hopes. He will give through his grace, throw his energy, the thing will happen. Then they try. Then they wait with a very strained mind, because a mind which hopes can never be at ease. With a very impatient mind, because a mind which is filled with hope cannot be patient. And then they start feeling uneasy because the thing is not happening. So this master is wrong. They must move to someone else. This is not movement from one master to another. This is movement from one hope to another. People move from one religion to another. Conversions are there. And just because of hope, you can go on doing it for many, many lives. You have been doing that. Now, try to see the point. It is neither a question of a master, nor a question of a right method. It is a question of a direct insight, an immediate penetration into the phenomena. What is happening? Why you hope? Why you can't be without hope? And what you have gained out of all your hoping? See it. It drops by itself. You are not even required to drop it. That's why I say it is easy. And I know well it is very difficult. Difficult because of you. easy because of itself. The phenomena is easy. You are difficult. And this can happen any moment. When I said this can happen any moment, I mean the phenomena of enlightenment, of egolessness, is not caused by anything. No cause is needed. It is not an outcome of many causes. It is not a byproduct. It is simple insight. It can happen to a sinner. It may not happen to a saint. So no necessary condition is needed really. Even to a sinner, if he can see, it can happen. If he becomes hopeless, if he feels that there is nothing to be gained and achieved, if he comes to see that the whole thing is just an absurd game, it can happen. It may not happen to a saint, because the saint goes on trying to achieve. He is not yet hopeless. This world has become futile, but another world has become meaningful. He has to leave this earth, but there are heavens beyond. He has to reach there. And even people near Jesus or Buddha go on asking things like this. Just on the last night, when Jesus is going to be caught and next day killed, his disciples ask him. They ask him, "Master, tell us, in the kingdom of God, when you will be sitting just by the right side of God's throne, what will be our positions there? Where we will be sitting? In what order? God sitting on his throne, Jesus on his right side, the only begotten Son, and then these 12 disciples. Where we will be sitting and what will be the order?" People around Jesus asking such a foolish question. But this is how human mind is. They don't ask anything of this world. They have become beggars. But they ask of the other world. They are not really beggars. They are hoping. They have staked this world, but it is a bargain. Where we will be there? Who will be sitting next to you? There must have been competition between those 12 disciples. Must have been politics, ambition. Somebody up, somebody down, somebody becoming the chief. There must have been much conflict, inner politics, undercurrents of violence and aggression. Even with Jesus, one starts hoping. Hope is deep-rooted in you. Whatsoever is said, you convert it into a hope. You are a hope-creating mechanism. And this hope-creating mechanism is the ego. So what is to be done? In fact, there is nothing to be done. Only you need more clear eyes, more perceptive eyes, more penetrating eyes. Only you need, all that is needed is to have a fresh look about you, your being, whatsoever you have been doing, hoping. a fresh look. And I say to you, in that fresh look, in that innocent look, ego drops by itself on its own accord. It is the easiest phenomenon and at the same time the most difficult. But remember well, I am not creating any hope in you.
In relation to what you just said, Zen has a saying, effortless effort. Could you talk about that in relationship to the methods you give us, the active meditation, the kirtan, and the whirling?
One very basic thing has to be understood about all types of energies. Meditation is an energy phenomenon. And this is the basic law to be understood. Energy moves in a dual polarity. That is the only way it moves. There is no other way of its movement. It moves in a dual polarity. For any energy to become dynamic, the antipole is needed. It is just like electricity moving with negative and positive polarity. If there is only negative polarity, electricity will not happen. And there is only positive polarity, electricity will not happen. Both the poles are needed. And when both the poles meet, they create electricity. Then the spark comes up. And this is so for all types of phenomena. Life goes on between man and woman, the polarity. The woman is the negative life energy, man is the positive pole. They are electrical, hence so much attraction. With man alone, life will disappear. With a woman alone, there can be no life, only death. Between man and woman, there exists a balance. Between man and woman, these two poles, these two banks, fills the river of life. Wherever you look, you will find the same energy moving into polarities, balancing itself. This polarity is very meaningful for meditation, because mind is logical and life is dialectical. When I say mind is logical, it means mind moves in a line. When I say life is dialectical, life moves with the opposite, not in a line, zigzag. From negative to positive, positive to negative, negative to positive, it moves zigzag. It uses the opposites. Mind moves in a line, simple, a straight line. It never moves to the opposite, it denies the opposite. It believes in one, and life believes in two. So whatsoever mind creates, it always chooses the one. If mind chooses silence, if mind has become fed up with all the noise that is created in life, then the mind thinks to be silent. It goes to the Himalayas. It wants to be silent. It doesn't want anything to do with any type of noise. Even the song of the birds will disturb. Breeze blowing through the trees will be a disturbance. The mind wants silence. Now it has chosen the line. Now the opposite has to be denied completely. But this man, living in the Himalayas, seeking silence, avoiding the other, the opposite, he will become dead. He will become certainly dull. And he will be more dull, more he chooses to be silent. Because life needs the opposite, the challenge of the opposite. There is a different type of silence which exists between two opposites. This is a dead silence, the silence of the cemetery. A dead man is silent. But you would not like to be a dead man. A dead man is absolutely silent. Nobody can disturb him. His concentration is perfect. You cannot do anything to distract his mind. His mind is absolutely fixed. Even if all around the whole world goes mad, he will remain in his concentration. But still you will not like to be a dead man's silence, concentration, whatsoever it is called, you will not like to be dead. Because if you are silent when dead, the silence is meaningless. Silence must happen while you are absolutely alive, vital, bubbling with life and energy. Then silence is meaningful. But then silence will have a different, altogether different quality to it. It will not be dull. It will be alive. It will be a subtle balance between two polarities. Then such type of man who is seeking a live balance, a live silence, would like to move to the market and to the Himalayas both. He would like to go to the market to enjoy noise. And he would like to go to the Himalayas also to enjoy silence. And he will create a balance between these two polar opposites. And he will remain in that balance. And that balance cannot be achieved through linear efforts. That is what is meant by Zen technique of effortless effort. It uses contradictory terms. Effortless effort or gateless gate or pathless path. Zen always uses the contradictory term immediately just to give you the hint that the process is going to be dialectical. Not linear. The opposite is not to be denied but absorbed. The opposite has not to be left aside. It has to be used. Left aside, it will always be a burden on you. Left aside, it will hang with you. Unused, you will miss much. The energy can be converted and used. And then, using it, you will be more vital, more live. The opposite has to be absorbed. Then the process becomes dialectical. Effortlessness means not doing anything. Inactivity, akarma. Effort means doing much, activity, karma. Both has to be there. Do much, but don't be a doer. Then you achieve both. Move in the world, but don't be a part of it. Live in the world, but don't let the world live in you. then the contradictory has been absorbed. Then you are not rejecting anything, not denying anything. Then the whole God has been accepted. And that's what I am doing. Dynamic meditation is a contradiction. The dynamic means effort, much effort, absolute effort. And meditation means silence, no effort, no activity. You can call it a dialectical meditation. Be so much active that the whole energy becomes a movement. No energy is left static in you. The whole energy has been called forth. Nothing is left behind. All the frozen parts of energy are melting, flowing. You are not now a frozen thing. You have become dynamic. You are not like substance now. You are more like energy. You are not material. You have become electrical. Bring total energy to work, to be active, moving. When everything is moving and you have become a cyclone, then become alert. Remember, be mindful. And in this cyclone, you will find suddenly a center which is absolutely silent. That this is the center of the cyclone. This is you. You in your divinity. You as a God. All around you activity. Your body has become an active cyclone. Everything moving fast, faster. All the frozen parts melted. You are flowing. You have become a volcano, fire, electricity. But just in the center, amidst all this movement, that there is a non-moving point, the still point. This is not to be created, it is there. You are not to do anything about it. It has always been there, it is your very being, your very ground of being. This is what Hindus have been calling the Atma, the soul. It is there. But unless your body, unless your material existence becomes totally active, you will not be aware about it. With total activity, the total inactive becomes apparent. The activity gives you a contrast. It becomes the blackboard. And on the blackboard, the white dot. On a white wall, you cannot see a white dot. On a blackboard, the white dot appears to you. So when your body has become active, dynamic, a movement, suddenly you become aware of a point which is still, absolutely still, the unmoving center of the whole moving world. That is effortless. No effort is done for it. No effort is needed. It is simply revealed. Effort on the part of the periphery. No effort on the part of the center. Movement on the periphery. Stillness on the center. Activity on the periphery. Absolute inactivity on the center. And between these two, this will be a little difficult, because you may get identified with the center, which Hindus have called the Atma, the soul. If you get identified with the center, which is still, you have again chosen something between the two. You have again chosen and rejected something. And there is a very subtle Eastern discovery. And that is, if you get identified with the still point, you will never know God. You will know the self, but you will never know God. And there are many traditions, particularly Jainas, who got too much identified with the self. So they say there is no God. The self is the only God. Hindus say, who have penetrated really deep, they say, this is still point and this activity on the periphery. Either you are both or you are none. Either you are both or you are none. Both mean the same. These are the two poles. These are the two dialectical poles, the thesis and the antithesis. These are the two banks. And you are somewhere between these two. Neither moving nor moving. This is the ultimate transcendence. This is what Hindus call the Brahma. Effort and effortless, movement and no movement, activity and no activity, matter and the soul. These are the banks. And between these two flows the invisible. These two are visible. Between these two flows the invisible. That you are. Tattva masi svetketu, says the Upanishad. That which flows between these two banks, that which cannot be seen, that which is really a subtle balance, nothing else, between these two, that art thou. That has been called the Brahma, the Supreme Self. A balance has to be achieved. And balance can be achieved only when you use both the polarities. If you use one, you become dead. Many have done that. Even whole societies have become dead. This has happened to India. If you choose one, unbalance, lopsidedness happens. It happened in India, in the East, that the silent part, the still point was chosen and the active part denied. So the whole East became dull. The sharpness was lost. The sharpness of intelligence, the sharpness of body vigor, everything was lost. The East became more and more dull, ugly. As if life became just a burden, to be carried somehow and dropped. A duty to be fulfilled, a karma to be suffered, not an enjoyment, not a vigorous dance, but a dull, a lethargic movement. And it had its consequences. The East became weak, because with the still point you cannot remain strong forever, for long, because strength needs activity, strength needs movement. If you deny activity, strength disappears. East lost its muscles completely. The body became flabby. So anybody who desired to conquer could conquer East. For thousands of years, slavery was the only destiny for the East. Anybody who had just an idea to make anybody a slave would turn towards the east. East was always ready to be conquered, because the eastern mind had chosen a point against the polar opposite. East became silent, but dead and dull also. This type of silence is not worth. The opposite is happening in the West. It has happened in other societies also. They have chosen the active part, the periphery, and they think that there is no soul, only this activity is all. And to be active, and to enjoy, and to achieve, and to be ambitious, and to conquer is all that life consists of. The ultimate result is going to be more and more madness in the West. Because without that still point, you cannot remain sane. You will become insane. Only with the still point, you cannot remain alive, you become dead. Only with the active, you become insane. People who are insane, what has happened to them? They have lost all contact with their still point. That's what their insanity is. West is turning into a big madhouse. More and more people are to be psychoanalyzed, psychiatrically treated. More and more people are to be put into madhouses. And those who are out, they are only out not because they are sane, but only because so many people cannot be put in insane houses, otherwise the whole society would have to be put in a prison. They are normal, workably normal. But Western psychology says that now it is difficult to say that any man is normal. And they may be right. In the West it has happened. No man is normal. Just activity creates madness. Balance is impossible. Active civilizations become mad in the end. Inactive civilizations become dead. This happens to societies. This happens to individuals. To me, balance is all. Don't choose. Don't reject. Accept both and create an inner balance. Dynamic meditation is an effort towards that balance. Active, enjoy it, be ecstatic. Be fully with it, then silent, enjoy it, be ecstatic about it, and move between these two as freely as possible, and don't create any choice. Don't say, I am this or that. Don't get identified. Don't say, I am this or that. I am both. Don't be afraid of contradicting yourself. Contradict. Be both. And move easily. And when I say this, I say it unconditionally. Not only activity, inactivity. Whatsoever is called bad and good, that too is included. Whatsoever is called the devil and the divine, that too is included. Always remember, everywhere there are banks, and if you want to be a river, use both the banks, unconditionally. And don't say, because I was active, how I can be inactive. And don't say, because I was inactive, now how I can be active. And don't say that I am this, so how can be that? You are both. And there is no need to choose. The only thing to remember is to be balanced between the two. Then you will transcend both. Then the devil and the divine will both be transcended. When both are transcended, that is Brahma. Brahma has no polarity against him, because he is just a balance between two polarities. There is no antipole to it. Move in life as freely as possible and use both the opposites, both the banks, as much as possible. Don't create any contradiction. They are not contradictory. They only appear to be contradictory. Deep down they are one. They are just like my legs, right and left. You use the right, you use the left. While you raise the right, the left is waiting on the earth, helping. And don't become addicted. Don't be a rightist or a leftist. Both legs are yours. And both the legs, your energy flows undivided. Have you ever felt the life? Right leg has some other energy and the left leg some other energy. You are flowing in both. Close the eyes, left disappears, right disappears. They are both you. And while moving, you can use them. Use both. If you become addicted with the right, as many people have become addicted, then you will be crippled. You cannot use the left. Then you can stint. You will be crippled, and by you will become dead. Move and constantly remember the unmoving center. Do and constantly remember the undoer. Make effort and remain effortless. Once you know this secret alchemy of using the opposite to the contradictory, you are free. Otherwise, you create inner imprisonments. There are people who come to me, they say, how can I do this? I have never done this. Just the other day, somebody was there. How I can do active meditation? He said to me. Because I have been for many years sitting silently. He has chosen. And he has nowhere reached. Otherwise, there was no need to come to me. But he cannot do the active because he has become identified with an inactive posture. This is getting frozen. Become more movement. Be moving and allow the life to flow. Once you know that between the opposites balance is possible, once you have a glimpse of it, then you know the arch. Then everywhere in life, in every dimension of life, you can attain that balance very easily. Really, to say that you can attain is not good. Once you know the knack of it, whatsoever you do, the balance follows you like a shadow. This inner balance between the opposites is the most significant thing that can happen to a man. Enough?